Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And back here on the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you. Little connection issue that I think we had there with Steve, so we'll get back to him in a moment from the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, all new pre-owned inventory, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day, Andrew Knapp, the hero for the Phils yesterday as they avoid the sweep from the Giants.
Leads off first. And Andrew lines one into left field, a base hit. Harper around third, heading for home. The throw by Dickerson is not in time. Harper with his fingertips on the plate.
Tom McCarthy with the call on NBC Sports Philadelphia as the Phillies get the W yesterday, get back to 500 at 9-9. They are off tonight, and they have the weekend series at Coors Field in Colorado coming up this weekend. Well, it looks like we've got the connection just about ready, so I'll get Donnie Collins ready now as he joins Steve now. Donnie, thanks so much for joining us, and I think we got Steve ready to go here.
Always a pleasure to be here, Steve.
Okay, so you know, everybody had an opportunity, you know, media and freshmen, I shouldn't say everybody, but that at least that grouping, to see the practice last Friday. Your general impressions of how it came about?
I mean, defensively, I think they're ahead, but you would expect that at this point. New offense, I think that was an affected kind of practice the other day. And you know, what you don't expect is some of the guys who, you know, for Kalen King to splash the way he did, as they say now. I mean, to get two interceptions, you don't expect that kind of thing in a true scrimmage. But you know, I think some of the things that the Penn State wanted to answer in that game, you know, they did. You know, Ebba Cady, I thought, played really well. Just a lot of good things on defense, but they have a ways to go on offense. But again, I think you expect that.
Yeah, along the way, you do expect that along the way. You're installing something new. To me, the spring is how you lay foundations so that when you get to the preseason, you can start building the house, to use that analogy. How do you look at that?
Yeah, I think that's really what it is. I mean, it's like spring training in baseball a little bit. You go through the drills, you see what you have, you see what you need to work on, and then once you get into the middle of March, then you really start working on it in baseball. And I think that's really what, you know, the difference between spring practice for Penn State and every program in the country. And then to me the real interesting camp has always been the August one, because obviously that's where you're setting up for your season, and you want to have a good idea coming out of spring of what you want to do, what you can do, and what you not now, you know, now that you have, you know, I guess the transfer portal and things like that, what you need to maybe build on, you know, if you can do it. So I think Penn State's done a good job with that this spring, especially on the defensive line. I think they answered some questions there, you know, with, you know, especially with Ebba Cady, but, you know, to keep Tarburton healthy and things like that. I think they'll be satisfied with the 14 practices, I guess, they've gotten so far, but yeah, and hopefully through the 15th.
Yeah, I mean, the 15th will be on Friday night, obviously, Friday evening. Anything surprise you, pro or con?
No. I mean, I think the one thing, I guess, that would surprise me is you wouldn't want to see your offense have some of the same problems it did last year. And they did turn the ball over a couple times. And, you know, Kalen King making some good plays. And Dixon, made some, it was pretty good too. But I thought, you know, I don't want to say I'm surprised by that. I just, you know, thought they would control that a little bit. And I think in the blue white game, a true blue white game, they might have. But in a scrimmage, which is much more useful than that, I don't know if you necessarily can. But yeah, I don't think, I'm not super surprised by anything. I think they have, you know, what. You know, maybe surprised a little bit by how good the defense was. I think they have potential to be. Like last year, I think they showed not very much at times, and at flashes at other times at best. But I think there's some, you know, they can be dynamic in the fall. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah, I think the defense especially had this advantage because there would be a couple of guys that would be battling for starting spots that weren't available in the offensive line on Saturday. The defense had everybody available.
Yeah.
And I think that, including, I think, 97. 97 at times looked like he was unblockable on Saturday, and that I'm talking about P.J. Mustipher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Mustipher should be unblockable. Like, you know, when you're really, I mean, like, you could argue, I guess, that your two starting guards in the game didn't play. I think Mustipher is better than those guys anyway. You know, he's a good player and all that. But yeah, I think it's just one of those things where, again, you're building towards something, and that's not the finished product you're seeing in that practice or in the one that's going to be out there tonight. But I think 15 practices are good no matter what. I mean, nobody's ever said they've had a bad 15 practice session.
No, and believe me, I think after last year, I think if you have players, coaches. I mean, the coaches were anxious for it. I think the players were really anxious to have the darn thing too. And what did you think of, you know, just general idea? You know, you talk about interceptions. What was just your general impression of Sean Clifford, who's trying to now, you know, master this offense?
Yeah, with Clifford, I have a very simple view of him, and it's probably too simple at times. But I think he's going to grasp the system. He's a competitive guy. I think he grasped Ricky Ronnie's system. He grasped Kirk Shiraka's last year, and he'll get this one. They're good quarterback systems, and he's a smart guy. He's competitive. Whatever he needs to do to get it, he'll get it. But it's going to come down to accuracy with him. Is he going to be able to complete the deep ball consistently enough? Mm-hmm. Is he going to be high over the middle, or is he going to be able to hit, you know, a receiver who might not be wide open? And I think that it's simply going to come down to his ability to do that sort of thing. Now, I don't know. You judge it on basically the one throw he got intercepted, I guess.
Sure.
But you know, and anybody could do that, and he had a couple of guys in the end zone last week that he missed. But you know, that's going to happen. He also hit some guys that were open, and he did a good job with that. So you know, I think for him, yeah, and I'm on record with this, he's the most important player. Number one, because he's the quarterback, and number two, because he's obviously the quarterback. There's really not another, you know, a guy that if he's not good, then your team's not going to be good. But I think he's still a work in progress, and you know, I'll wait to see in the fall what he's going to bring. But I think if they're telling me he's making strides, he's making strides. But I also don't know what else they're going to tell me. He's a little bit of a wild card. But I'm you know, the whole how is he picking up the system thing this spring? I'm not concerned about that. He's going to do that.
So then let's go to the next part. It was really the first real time people have had a chance to see an extended period of time of Taquan Roberson. So in your first extended look at him, what was the general impression you had?
Yeah, you know, I've always kind of liked Roberson.
Yeah.
Dating back to the film, and you know, I thought when they brought him and Michael Johnson, and I thought that Roberson's the guy who's gonna make it out of those two. I just, he had some McSorley to him. He's able to do things on the run. He's kind of a gambler a little bit, and I like that in a quarterback, because that's how you make some big plays. And I outside of the interception, which was, you know, not a good ball, but I thought he did some good things. You know, he's your backup guy. There's no chance he's really going to compete for the starting job against Wisconsin with Clifford.
Sure,
but I think he made some strides, and he's really not a guy you've heard a lot about from the coaches over the years, which to me, you know, I wonder why. But he's also had some injury issues. Last year there were some games he wouldn't have been able to play even if they needed him. But I think he's an interesting prospect. I don't think that anything that happened last week changed my mind on that. But I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy who they're going to look at in a competition and say he's our starting guy. But the question is, could he come off the bench and win you a game?
Right.
In relief if he has to. I think I didn't have no confidence in him after that performance.
A couple moves. Obviously, Brandon Smith inside, which, you know, and that can happen because Curtis Jacobs can play outside. And then the other one was Marquise Wilson, now in an athlete position on the roster for Penn State. Just general thoughts on those two moves that were made in the spring.
Well, the Smith move is very smart. I mean, that's his position. That's where his skill set is.
Yeah.
I talked to Jacobs for quite a bit, actually, after the game, kind of, you know, and asked him basically, you know, what his, you know, why he should play, you know, why for the Sam position, why his skills fit in there. And he really, you know, he's played extensively at defensive back. He loves that coverage aspect that Smith was doing last year.
Yeah.
And not that Smith doesn't like it or wasn't good at it, but his skill set is much more sideline to sideline, tackling, play in the box. You know, go make plays on the quarterback blitz, use your speed, your strength. He's a matchup issue in there. So I think that really sets the defense up to be a little more versatile, to have a playmaker at linebacker. You know, this defense, and I don't need to tell anybody this, but when you have a playmaker at linebacker, that's Penn State's defense. That's just what they've always done. The Wilson thing surprised me because I think that tells you one thing. It tells a couple things. Number one is how good they think Dixon and Kalen King are.
Yes.
And number two, it tells you how deep they are in defense, especially in the secondary, where you have that many guys that you could look at. Marquise Wilson, who is not—he's not just some guy at cornerback. He's a guy I thought could have started.
Right.
I mean, I really thought he had shown a lot of good things over the last two seasons. He played great in the Cotton Bowl. He played well at times last year. So to move him to receiver, and I think he's got—he is there. You just have pretty good hands at a cornerback. He showed that he's kind of a shifty guy, so we'll see, you know, in the open field what he could bring there. It really wasn't much to look at in the game with how good a receiver he could be, and he'd only been there for a week anyway. But I think that's an interesting move for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, it shows you what they think of him as an athlete, what they think he could do on offense, and number two, it shows you what that defense could still be without him.
Donnie, it is always a pleasure. Really appreciate it very much, as always. Are you going to be here on Friday?
No,
okay.
I'm not. I wish I could, but I'll be there in spirit.
Okay, well done. Well, okay. I'll feel the spirit as you're all over the place there.
Yeah, feel the spirit.
Yeah. Thanks, Donnie. Appreciate it very much.
All right, Steve. We'll see you.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Great to have you with us on this Thursday as we continue. The draft, by the way, a week from today. And we're also 8 days away from Matt complaining about the draft and how the Eagles went through the first round.
Yeah. We'll see.
See, that's the difference. Okay? The suit actually will look at draft choices and he'll come up with reasons why somebody's good. Okay. Right? I mean, he will.
Most of the time.
he'll come up with some reasons why somebody's good. Now, none of it makes sense. It's not realistic. Right? Then there's you. You hate every pick. And none of it makes sense, but it's okay. Yeah. I mean, look at me. I'm a fan of the New York Giants. I have Dave Gettleman. How fortunate am I? On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Missed it. And B. Oh! Wow!
Watch this. First of all, I can't believe he missed it. But then JoJo, clean rebound, one motion. Look at that.
And you want to know why they needed him to try and take that shot to win it? Which, look at JoJo. Look at JoJo. JoJo turned it over 8 times in the game. Look at the box score. Okay? 8 times he turned the ball over. 8. Okay? Guess what? Okay? Because he turned it over 8 times, he was in a position to take that shot. It's like the quarterback that gets credit for a fourth quarter comeback. Right? And all of a sudden you look at the game and you realize he threw 3 interceptions. The reason he needed to make the fourth quarter comeback is because he kept giving the other team a chance. It's like, come on. Oh, we live in such a world of highlights now.
Yeah. And could I say this too? And I'm going to throw up inside as I say this, but the Sixers has slowly been very Nets-like these last couple of nights because they're starting to baby Ben Simmons, who's got a non-COVID illness. He's been out the last 2 games. Tobias Harris has a nagging injury. So does Seth Curry. And now they're not playing the last couple of games. You can't afford to be throwing these games away. You're still only up a half game. You're lucky the Nets lost last night to the Raptors. If you look at your record, you'd be smart enough to know, hey, we probably want the number 1 seed because we're much better at home than on the road. So enough with this babying. I just had enough of it with this mold management. I don't need to bring this conversation back up again. But now that my team's starting to do it, it's starting to irk me even more now, if you couldn't tell. If they're healthy enough, play them. It's that simple.
You're done?
I'm done. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Now, I want to make sure I gave you all the room in the world to operate there. Holy mackerel.
Well, I thought you would appreciate that because you would basically agree.
Oh, I agree, but I'm trying to set a positive.
Doesn't mean you want to hear it.
I'm trying to set a positive tone in the broadcast if I can. Almost every person I work with here scares me. All right.
It's like they're the one team I got left right now. You can't screw it up. But I say that selfishly.
Little Luke. Daddy doesn't mean to come home angry. Yikes. Yikes. Wow. Poor little guy. Why is Daddy mad all the time, Mommy? Well, honey, the Eagles aren't very good. But we love the Flyers. The Flyers aren't any good. But the owners of the Yankees spend $4.8 billion on the best players. Lukey, they aren't good either. What about the Sixers? They're getting worse. Oh, poor Lisa having to explain to the little guys all the time what the problem is. That's why every football is not a real one in the room. They're all Nerf balls. Because you have a tendency to throw them.
And
does less damage.
And the sad part is she's got to do this all over again in about 8-9 weeks.
She's going to have to do this her entire life.
Well, yeah.
I mean, her entire life. It's going to be, suddenly Teenage Luke. Hey, yo, Mom, what's the deal with Dad? Oh, the Eagles still stink, honey. Yeah. Wedding day. All right. Why, you know, does Dad not like who I'm marrying? No, honey, the Eagles had a bad day at training camp. It's going to be your time. And I'm going to be sitting in the back of the church going, can't you at least have a nice day once in a while? I mean, my goodness. I mean, you only had to pay for half the wedding. You're the father of the groom.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, great new inventory, the best. And also, they have a fabulous pre-owned inventory that goes through a complete inspection, 164-point inspection. That's why it has the Sunbury Motors guarantee. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Great to have you with us on the show today. We've already gone through Matt's world of sports, and that we've thoroughly, completely depressed the audience. Well, your teams can't play. Wow. Yeah. No matter how much money they spend. But I always find that interesting. We always look at the end of a game, and I understand that. The end of the game, or that last drive, that last shot, I understand all of that. And I really understand it because, you know, that's the lasting impression that you get, is that last shot, last play. I always look at it differently than most people because of what I do. I'm there and talking about every single play. I mean, every play. So it sticks in my mind that one of the reasons you're in this spot to begin with is because of what happened in the previous 2 to 3 hours, depending on what the sport happens to be. That's why you'll see, Jack and I always laugh all the time, and we kid about this all the time, that the people that sit back and they talk about all the comebacks made by the, you know, this quarterback has engineered 12 comebacks in his career in the fourth quarter. Well, how many times in the fourth quarter did he have to engineer the comeback? Because in the first three quarters he played, he personally wasn't very good and was a big reason they were behind. There are some days where you're behind and it's no matter what you're doing, there's nothing more the quarterback could have done. All right, there's no getting around it. There are some of those days. But there are also some days where a big reason why you're behind is because the quarterback was a little bit off for the first, I don't know, three quarters of the game, then suddenly finds whatever, and it's all good. We're back in business, and he engineered a comeback. Well, you know, if you played better the other three quarters, you wouldn't have needed the comeback. And part of that is because I'm sitting there for every play and talking and engaged in every play. That's why I look at the entirety of the game and I don't look at just the end of the game. So Embiid takes a shot and he just misses at the end. Phenomenal, right? But one of the reasons they're in that spot is he turned it over 8 times in the game. Now, you're going to turn it over. You're not going to have one of those days where you don't turn it over. You're going to turn it over. But 8 is, I mean, 8's too big a number for obvious reasons. I mean, teams are trying to average 8 turnovers. That's what you're trying to average. You're trying to average, if it's possible, 8 turnovers. You can't have one guy turn it over 8 times. What a game. No, he didn't have a... I'll never forget a game I did in Rec Hall in the mid-90s. Wisconsin was playing Penn State. And Michael Finley had 27 points. Finley went on and had... By the way, Finley went on to have himself a really good NBA career. Mavericks, Suns. I mean, Finley was a good NBA player. And Finley was a good college player. And somebody said to me, he says, boy, what a great game Finley had. He had 27 points. I said, what are you talking about? I said, he took 27 shots to get his 27 points. I said, no offense. I said, that's volume, but that's not a good game. You have to have a higher standard for a good game. That's why I'll look at points per shot along the way. And if it's 1-1, I mean, if you have to take 27 shots to get 27 points, you have not had a good game. Because remember, the 27 points on 27 shots includes how many free throws did you make that didn't count as shots. And that is... that's why you brought up the Embiid play. I was like, well, he turned it over 8 times. And I guess we're not supposed to notice. See, that's why I have different judgment as to what I think is a good game compared to maybe somebody else does, in part because when I'm watching a game, I'm watching like every play. I do every play of a basketball game. I do every play of a football game. So you remember the good with the bad. That's why. Now let's take bad. All right, let's take bad. Bill Buckner famously let the ball go through his legs in the World Series game, Game 6 against the Mets in 1986, right? Now let's take the good. Okay, a huge reason why the Red Sox were even in the World Series in that particular year is because Bill Buckner drove in 102 runs that season. So, you know, if you look at something in not just the moment, but in the entirety of it, you can at least lend some perspective to it. Right? The Red Sox probably are not in the World Series if Bill Buckner doesn't help out the cause by driving in 102 runs. Then they get to that game, and with everything he accomplished, he's only remembered in 1986 for letting the ball go through his legs. That's all he's remembered for. He's not remembered for the 102 runs he drove in to help get them there. It wasn't the only reason why they got him there, but he was an important part of getting them there. But see, that part is not remembered. It's not talked about. It's not fun to do on talk radio. I mean, talk radio is fun when everything's negative. That's where Matt thrives, when things are negative. The Eagle thing. Very entertaining.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
That's why we try hard to do what we can to lend as much, quote, perspective as possible and remind the audience of certain elements along the way. It's always not that simple. Oh, that shot. Did you see what Embiid did? Oh, man. Did you watch the game? Nah, I saw the last shot on the highlights, which I understand completely. Right? But you watch the game, he's turning the ball over left and right. Right, losing opportunities at scoring, opening up opportunities for them to score. Simmons isn't playing, Matt's mad. Harris isn't playing, Matt's mad.
No Seth Curry either.
All right, let's see. NCAA votes to change overtime rules. All right, here we go.
Oh, boy.
Well, this is what they're going to do. Here we go.
No, this is for football?
This is for football.
Okay.
The NCAA Playing Rules Oversight Panel today approved 4 college football rules changes that go into effect at the start of the 21 season. Chief among those rules will be an adjustment to overtime. Teams will get the ball at the 25. They score a touchdown. They can kick an extra point. Now, say it's no matter what, field goals or TDs matching. Now you go to the second overtime. In the second overtime, you are now forced to go for a 2-point conversion when you score a touchdown. It used to be that you went to, it was the third overtime where you'd have to go for a two-point conversion.
So now they're just moving it up one.
Now, I've done a three-overtime game, the Orange Bowl, and I've done a four-overtime game, the game with Michigan. The two-point rules were not in effect for either one, so each one went to extra points. Okay? Teams will now be forced to go for a two-point conversion starting with the second overtime. If the game is still tied after the second overtime, then you're going to a two-point conversion shootout.
What?
Yep. I had a feeling this was coming.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I'm not surprised because I've been hearing it might happen. So the first overtime will look like it always has for you. They start at the 25. All right, and if both teams score touchdowns, both teams can kick extra points. In the second overtime, if both teams score touchdowns, well, anybody scores a touchdown, okay? You know, both teams score touchdowns, or even the first team. The first team that scores a touchdown has to then go for a two-point conversion, which then tells the other team that they have to score a touchdown and a two-point conversion to win. Okay. If it's still tied at the end of two, then they put the ball on the two-yard line, and we start doing two-point conversions.
Until somebody doesn't get one, basically.
Exactly. now, what people don't realize is that last year, that two-point conversion shootout was actually in the rule book, but it was starting with the fifth overtime, not the third. And the two-point conversion thing was in the third overtime. Now it's in the second.
So basically, the final would be final three overtimes with the shootout involved.
Well,
you know, so there's no more four or five overtimes, basically.
Oh, well, in other words, you could have like misses or makes where you could be the 10th overtime in the shootout.
Okay, so it would still be designated in overtime.
My point is the 2-point shootout was in the fifth overtime last season.
Right.
But we never once got to it. So that's why nobody knew it. Now it's going to be in the third overtime.
This is an embarrassment of the sport. Dumber beyond dumb.
Now the permanent expansion of the team sideline area. Is going to be between the 20-yard lines. It used to be between the 25s. Last year they expanded it to 15 for social distancing. Now from now on it's going to be between the 20s. That's fine. Yeah, I have no problem with them expanding it. No issue with that. That makes common sense, especially when you know, it's not like an NFL game. An NFL game, you have 45 players. In college, I mean, the visiting team of the Big Ten has 74-plus staff. The panel approved the framework of a plan first proposed by the College Football Rules Committee regarding players faking injuries. Okay, this comes into the suits playing career. Schools and conferences may now request a post-game video review from the NCAA Secretary of Rules Editor and/or National Coordinator of Officials who believes players faked injuries. In other words, you're running tempo and all of a sudden it's like out of nowhere. Like, we ran out of Gatorade and everybody's cramping. The practice has become more common in recent years to slow down the pace of tempo offenses. There will be new points of emphasis that officials will focus on this year, including taunting penalties, uniform violations, and coaches who enter the field or exit the team area to debate calls, and also for color analysts and where they need to stand to do the halftime and post-game interviews.
S-U-I-T, that spells suit-a.
He has an incredible influence over the game. I'm standing here on the 20-yard line. Yes, but you're on the 20 in the field. What? But they're at the other end. What if they pick it off? Oh. Okay. Like, what happens if there's a fumble and they're running it back? I guarantee you, not quick enough to get to the sideline to get out of the way. That's a guarantee. Oh, my good. So those are what, you know, now the points of emphasis I knew because Jerry McGinn did talk to the Penn State football team about some of the points of emphasis, so that I knew. But this other stuff is put into play now anyway, so. Look, teams practice two-point conversions anyway, so.
But I don't understand the point behind all this, because if they're trying to end the games early or whatever, that doesn't really solve anything.
Well, yeah, it does. This is what happens. If you're running a play instead of a series of plays, okay, at this point, everybody's really tired. I think by doing this, they're trying to, I think, reduce the possibility of injury. For example, you look at the, and I've watched this. I could not watch this game all the way through. Final game of the regular season in 2018 in the SEC, Texas A&M beat LSU 74-72 in seven overtimes. Well, seven overtimes, I mean, let's take a base here. Probably in overtime, you're probably running, because it's 25 years out, you could be running as many as seven plays. All right? Well, think about this. That's 49 extra plays that the offense and the defense, let's minimize it. Let's say 40. Suddenly you're running 40 extra plays if you're Texas A&M, and you're running 40 extra plays if you're LSU. See what I mean? Now you're...
Yeah, I guess that's fair. It's just, either way, guys are still going to have to hit. Guys are still going to have to go at it, each other for extra plays anyway. So I think you just got to let the game play itself out and not go to this one-time-fits-all. I mean, because I hate the shootout in hockey, so maybe this is coming from that, but I'd rather have the game be played to finish out to determine a winner rather than just like this shootout nonsense.
I understand. I just think what they're trying to do is they're trying to reduce the number of plays. I mean, yeah, it's trying to shorten the game. I think trying to shorten the game in terms, like, you get into a seven overtime scenario like that. Or remember Eli Manning when he was Ole Miss?
Yes.
Was in a, what, five overtime game?
I remember
game?
That game, yeah.
But, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting, but that's a lot of extra wear and tear on the players, you know, and they're all, and each play in overtime is a dramatic, you can't, you know, like, you know, look, let's face it. Are there a couple guys out there that once in a while take a quota playoff? All right? It's like, what are you doing? And they're not running to my side. In overtime, nobody's doing it. You know what I mean?
Right. I get it.
Nobody's doing that in overtime. These are like 40 pressure-packed plays when it's an extended overtime. And that's, I think, the issue. So I think that's the reason they're doing it. They could have gone with penalty kicks. Because, you know, in fact, I think in soccer now they just should start the game with penalty kicks.
You're brutal.
Like you'll see some of these nothing jobs. You're like, why don't you just start with the penalty kicks? Okay, I sat here for 2 hours. I waited. I mean, you wonder why the guy from Brazil gets so excited on a goal, because it's so doggone rare. It's like even he's in shock. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment and wrap it up on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Domingo Germán goes for the Yankees tonight. Certainly is inspiring.
Yippee.
So far, seven innings, 12 hits. That's not good. Lots of runs, four home runs. He's giving up a home run almost, I mean, a little bit more than every other inning. Meanwhile, the Indians pitcher, Cervalli, is 3-0 with a 2.18 ERA. He's actually like pitching like a legitimate major league guy.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly tonight.
Not
that
here.
It matters because nobody can hit right now, so.
Oh, that's right. He's out of East Windsor, Connecticut. I forgot. I think he's the kid my brother talked about, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's out of East Windsor, Connecticut. He makes 36.4 million less per year than Gerrit Cole and has more wins.
Yeah.
I don't think that's good.
You're correct.
Although Cole has pitched well.
Yeah, he just can't buy a run. Like I said, you can throw a no-hitter in the Yankees, you would still lose right now because the Yankees can't hit to save their life.
Ken Johnson, Houston, Colt 45s. Threw a no-hitter. The Colt 45s were an expansion team. And he lost 2-1.
Brutal.
Very. Very brutal. But this is your team. This is how they what they do. This is how they play. Spend a lot of money. Give you a little bit of hope. Crush your hopes as the season goes. Yeah.
At least there's 162 instead of 65. Then we'd be in much more deep doo-doo.
Yeah. Yeah, he makes $600,000 a year.